This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. On Wednesday, April 9th, members of the Klaylee Tene Nation are headed to the ballot boxes. Voting hours are from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Todd Corrigal of Central Strategies, and who is the Senior Public Affairs Advisor at the Klaylee Tene Nation, joined us in CIFR Studios today. Thanks so much for joining us, Todd.
Thanks for the invite.
I'm sure this is amidst a busy time, and I'm hoping you can provide an overview of what's happening, what a typical election looks like. The day is approaching fast, so the campaign period must be wrapping up. Or is there a set campaign period? What's the lowdown?
I don't know if I can necessarily speak to what things look like right now. The difference between traditional colonial elections and First Nations elections is the campaigning happens on a very community-based platform. So you would see quite a bit of information on social media, mostly Facebook. You would see some candidate videos, candidate commentary, not necessarily op-eds, but anything they write and sort of post on their pages, you could find out there. Whereas, you know, a traditional, as we know them, elections like the federal election going on right now, you'll see ad buys, multiple ads running during one ad break, radio ads that are running, newspaper ads. And that doesn't happen traditionally with First Nations elections. I can't speak to other nations and how they may operate, but the nice thing about how they do this, it is very community-centric. It's focused on the community members. It's focused on the members that the election really matters to, and that's how they spend their time.
You mentioned Facebook is a typical media platform that people are sharing information on. What is the primary method of, you know, getting your word out within this election? Is there door knocking? Is there canvassing? What do things look like in that regard?
Yeah, I think you certainly see some door knocking, some canvassing, some attendance at specific events and outreach opportunities. If there's anything going on in the community, you'd definitely see candidates showing up to those events. Not that they don't show up to those events traditionally, but you might see people that you have not traditionally seen at some of those events coming out and speaking to the membership. But again, it's very grassroots orientated. So you could go door knocking in community. Obviously, I believe there's about 250 members who live on reserve just in Prince George, with around 990 total members globally for Klaylee Tene. And out of that, there's a certain number that are eligible voters, meaning they're of the age of majority to vote and can exercise that right.
With some membership existing off territory elsewhere in the country or even another part of the world, is the ability to vote restricted to being in person at the ballot box with a paper ballot, or are there methods of being able to send in your ballot electronically or through mail or some other method?
Yeah, so right now, Klaylee Tene offers in-person voting at the band office on their reserve lands on voting day, which is Wednesday, April the 9th, I believe is the date. And then for members who live off reserve, right now they have access to mail-in ballots. So right now the process is still conducted under the Indian band election regulations. And so members who are living off reserve in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, have access to requesting a mail-in ballot and then have to have that submitted on time.
There are ways to participate if you can't be there in person.
Correct, yes. Yeah, so the electoral process is still quite old in its form. So they are paper ballots, they are mail-in ballots, and they are physically hand-counted by the chief electoral officer in the band office at the close of election. So if voting ends at 8, at 8:01, the counting will start and it will continue until such time as it's complete.
In that type of process, I imagine there's probably not lots of runoffs and recounts and this triggered by that and so on and so forth. I'm going to guess it's fairly smooth. What's your take on that?
Well, I would say the count is fairly smooth. There's a myriad of reasons that somebody could challenge an election result. The most previous election was challenged by an individual member. So then that goes to ISC. And then ISC does their own review. They try to keep it to 30 days, obviously being respectful that, again, the term limits are fairly short. So the longer they take, the less time there is for the band to actually action things that they're working towards. So it's in everyone's best interest for them to run the ISC review process and either find the election in order or seek remedy.
Once someone is elected, how long do they have to govern?
Yeah, so terms are 2 years. And they're not offsetting, so it's 2 years for the group, and then you'll go to an election. The one thing, I'm not sure if it's a Clayton policy or if it's just been the policy of the council of the day, but effectively come January of the election year, which always occurs in April, they try and slow down any major financial decisions on behalf of the band, which, you know, that's a wise decision, I think, for a governing body to say, you know, we need the people to speak and understand what our mandate is, but that sort of truncates terms again too. The challenge I find for a number of First Nations is that their election terms are so short. So to accomplish much in 2 years is really challenging. I think we saw municipally the city of Prince George 2 cycles ago switched from 3 years to 4 years because they were finding it challenging under 3 years to really make a noticeable mark.
As far as I know, there are 5 councillor positions and 1 chief position. Has this number ever fluctuated as far as councillor positions?
Yeah, so it actually is fluctuating in this election.
Okay.
So they are going up by 3 members of council. So it's a pretty significant jump in the number of councillors that will be elected this year. It's obviously still 1 chief. And so for Clayton Tene specifically, you can develop a custom election code as a First Nation. That's something within the purview of the Indian Act that allows them to do. And within that, you can structure things how you want to structure things. And so it's a very long process of developing a CEC, bringing it forward to community, ratifying that, and then implementing it for a subsequent election. So the process to make these changes is arduous.
Okay.
The implementation of it, it can always be frustrated by a million different things, but for this election specifically, there is 3 new council positions being added. So you'll have a total of 9 members of chief and council from 6.
CEC, referring to chief executive council. In order to make changes to CEC numbers, you probably had to undergo some of these arduous applications and changes to make room for 3 more positions.
So thankfully, I didn't have to go through any of the arduous processes of that, but the nation has been engaged in a number of CEC discussions for years now.
Takes time to make meaningful change.
Governance doesn't happen overnight.
Is there a central issue or issues you think nation members will be weighing at the ballot box April 9th? What is front and center during this election cycle?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could answer that. I'm not a member, so it complicates it for me to sort of speak on behalf of any of the members of what's important. I would encourage anybody who's interested in learning more about the election to take a look at the finalized candidate listing, which is on Clayton Tene's Facebook page, and it lists who was nominated and then subsequently who accepted their nomination is remaining in the race. And then you can search out those individuals online. There's a lot of different videos, posts, individual pages, things like that that you can find, and you can start to learn more about what the candidates are speaking to. And I would imagine if the candidates are speaking to it, there's somebody who's added some fuel to that.
The process of electing a chief and council in this method, is that a practice that has been conducted since time immemorial, to your knowledge, or did the current method begin when the band council governance model was imposed via the Canadian federal government through the Indian Act? Or prior to that, was there another method?
Yeah. I suspect the creation of the Indian Act led to a number of this. I don't have any sort of specifics on dates and inactions, and there's been several amendments, like 1986 was one of the more substantial adjustments to the Indian Act, and that's a long time ago, and you know it was reopened recently within the last 10 years, and there were some opportunities examined, but the Indian Act is still a very colonial guide to sort of work within it. Mm-hmm. It challenges them. You know, they're supposed to be viewed as an equal governing body, and yet you're constantly having to go back and seek funding opportunities from, let's go air quotes, senior government. And depending again on where you're located, there's different governance models. So there's some that have hereditary systems that are garters of the land, and band council is responsible for the IRs. Some have potlatch systems that do things differently. Clayley has their elected band council that operates everything, and there's a number of nations that operate like that, bands and nations that operate like that. So within the Indian Act, there's all these different sort of issues and opportunities that come up, and then it's managing through those and finding pathways.
Over the past several years, there seems to be a strengthening relationship between the Clayley Tene Nation and various levels of government. Does it look like it's more increasingly important to develop relations between levels of government to get done the things that the nation wants to get done?
Yeah, I mean, it's highly critical anytime, no matter which level of government you're operating at, you're always seeking partnerships at a different level. So municipalities are always engaged with the province as holders of the Municipal Government Act. First Nations are always engaged with, you know, primarily the federal government because of ISC. Indian Services Canada, and that's where the Indian Act resides. However, there's strengthening partnerships with the province. So we've seen treaty and reconciliation agreements being signed in BC over recent months and years. There's, you know, ongoing discussions around that. So I can't speak specifically for Clayley Tene. This is sort of an area where I work with them most closely. And I would say that they are very genuine and open to building those relationships, to having those discussions, to seeking variable pathways and opportunities. Clayley has twice voted treaty down in their recent histories. And so it's important to engage with other levels of government to help them, A, understand why those processes are not moving forward, but B, what does the lateral opportunity look like on the other side, and how do you cultivate that learning and opportunity with each other? And I would say that, you know, Chief Logan and her council and the administrative team have gone to great lengths to develop and cultivate those relationships to the point where there is a very open dialogue amongst senior officials federally and provincially in speaking with Chief and Council.
So you mentioned ISC, or Indigenous Services Canada.
Well, there's two. This is where the federal government becomes a challenge. So ISC, or Indian Services Canada, runs everything that happens on reserve lands across the country. Then the federal government also has MIR, which is the Ministry of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation, which the province has mirrored with Minister Boyle, formerly Minister Rankin under the last government. And so the linkage between those two was developed very strategically, I think, from the government of the day to align the work that was happening federally with the work that they wanted to happen provincially, and so that there was open to a dialogue. The challenge then becomes that everything managed on reserve goes through ISC, and ISC's funding model is still very challenging. So if you take a nation like Clayley Tene that's divided by a river, ISC will only fund one project on reserve lands. So if, let's say, for example, you're building a water and wastewater treatment facility like they are on the north side, that means the south side won't be connected to it unless there's a linkage. And right now there's no bridge connecting the two sides of their reserve lands. And so this is a very big conversation to be had with the Fed and the province of how are we linking the reserve lands, which you have said are Clayley's reserve lands, because now in the nation's mind, there's a fiduciary responsibility to service that land.
I'm getting tangential here, but in the project of, say, a bridge, would that entity consider funding a bridge, or would they not because the bridge is over a body of water, and is the body of water technically regarded as part of the reserve?
You know, this has become such a hole to go down because there's so many variable issues that come up with this. One, you know, it's traveling over the Fraser River. This is not a tributary. This is a strong flowing river that is very critical to freshwater salmon, to spawning grounds, to leading to the ocean, and at times can be a rough body of water. So we are not talking about a stick-built community bridge that you ride a 12-speed bicycle across, right? I mean, this has to be a significant bridge, and with that comes significant spends. You know, we're talking in the tens of millions of dollars to even get to that place, and then the construction afterwards. Do I believe that they have a responsibility to fund and move that forward? I absolutely do.
back to the election for a minute. So there's any myriad of issues that are on hand for members of the nation, but voting is obviously important. Where are the ballots being cast?
Yeah, so there is one in-person voting location, and that's the band office on the south side of the reserve, the Shelley side of the reserve. And that's where in-person voting will happen on Wednesday, April 9th.
9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thank you so much for coming in today, Mr. Corrigal. We are speaking today in CIFA Radio Studios with Senior Public Affairs Advisor Todd Corrigal of the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation. Elections are happening April 9th, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the band office in Shelley. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.